Rather than on the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly what the problem is.
So
all right. Right. Yeah. Right.
If it would have
right.
cooked all the way through,
right.
anyhow, that would have been.
If it had cooked in any case, right, then we say it's definitely it's kosher because the Jew who started it, you know, to this already. And if we say if he hadn't turned over, like the goy hadn't turned it over, lo have a bushel would not have been cooked. Amay mutar. Why should it be permissible? Isn't this b'shulei shaleta kachavim ninhu? Right. Then that means that the cooking was done by whom? By the goy, right? So he says, Lo tzricho. So we needed a case that ilay hofach av a boshel betate sharab. So we're talking about a case where, if the goy hadn't come along and turned it over, it would have cooked anyway in 2 hours. Okay? The hashta, now that the goy turned it over, so ko boshel bechadashata. So it's already cooked in 1 hour. Okay. But, yes.
Is there a possibility that the goy could add things?
That the goy what?
Could add things, throw something in.
Yeah. Could throw something in.
Yeah.
He's doing a really good job. He's not just flipping it over for the guy, but he thought he would put on a little barbecue.
If that's the case, that's a bad business. But we're talking about this piece of meat, which obviously you can identify. It's the only thing on the fire. Nothing else has been added to the fire, okay?
Well, he gives us turn to meat.
Right, right.
Yeah, but I know, you're imagining that.
So it says, Mao de Seba, what if you say? Yeah, Karuva Ebishula Milsahi, that to us it's important as to how soon the food could be cooked. Komashponon, we see that no, it's going to be cooked anyway by itself, even if it takes longer, so we don't have to worry, even though the goy turned it over. As I say, we're not talking about where something else was put on the fire, only that he turned it upside down, that's all. Well, of course.
In any case, it's
yeah. Yeah, it's permitted because who started the cooking? The Jews started. And not only that, but we have to assume that since one side was already cooked, that was sufficient already to consider it, you know, as if it were cooked, even if we're not completely cooked, but it's already cooked. The Omar Rav Asi, Omar Rav Yochanan, and Rav Asi said the name Rav Yochanan, he says, Kol Shehu Kemachal Ben Drosai, Ein Bo Bishul Bishulei Oivdei Kochofi. Okay? But all right, come to another in principle. Rav Asi said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, he says, if food is cooked to the extent as what we call the food of Ben Drosai, I'll come back to that in a moment, but at any rate, that takes it already out of the category of cooked by a goy. But if it hadn't reached that stage as yet, then it could come into the category of cooked by the goy. Okay.
It hadn't cooked halfway through.
Yeah. Right. The question is, what is machal ben drosai? So the answer is, this ben drosai happened to be a bandit. Okay? And since he always had to watch out for the authorities, he's a bandit who kept kosher. Okay, kept kosher. So when he would cook food, and then he see, you know, that he had to get going, if it was, according to one authority, a third cooked, according to another one, half cooked, so that already was enough. Ben Drosai was able to eat it, and so on. So,
bandit.
Yeah, it was a Jewish bandit.
Jewish bandit.
Right. They had them.
Who invented rear roast beef, is that correct?
Huh?
He invented rear roast beef.
Rear roast beef.
Right, right. Exactly. So at any rate, this is very important, incidentally, as far as cooking for Shabbos is concerned. Very important. Cooking for Shabbos is one of the principles. Machal ben drosai, right?
Yeah.
Namely, that you have to begin cooking your food Erev Shabbos, And if it has reached the stage where it's at least one third or one half cooked, then the rest of it could finish by itself, you see. This is the principle behind making a challah.
Right. You bring it to a certain size.
Right, exactly. So, right. So the same thing will apply. Is it Jewish cooked or Goyish cooked? If it's Kemachal ben Drosa, it reached that point already, then, and then we said it was a Jew who started fire, then in that particular case, it's considered kosher. Okay. Okay. So he says, Hatsum says there, this case that we were talking about is Kigon, the Oisve, Besilta, Meshakli. All right. Here's the case, they said. First, he put in, you know, Silta. Silta is a basket, okay?
A what?
A basket. All right?
Basket.
A basket. Put into a basket,
right?
And, okay. Apparently he made it, you know, let's say he cooked it halfway, right? Then he took it out from the fire and he put it in the basket. The shakley ovid kachodim, and along came the goy, right? The yosvi b'tanura. So he took this meat and he put it back into the oven. Okay?
Right.
So, in other words, what? What we see over here is the possibility that if the Jew started it, and a guy simply comes along and aids the cooking process, but is not the one who started it, that in that particular case, the food is kosher. The reason I mention these, I mean, these are things really that, you know, pertain to having food cooked by goyim. I mean, our caterers, for example, you know, you go in, you go into Shay Joseph, there's only one Jewish cook that they have over there. But, you know, all the rest of the staff are all about Goyim, okay? So how can you rely upon their kashrus? So you have to have the mashgiach stand over there, maybe adjust the fire or something or other, you know, and watch, you know. So that then, you know, it would be considered that if the Jew, for example, puts on the oven, then that's already the start of cooking by a Goy, by a Jew, you understand?
Because the food has not
right.
started to cook.
Right, yet. Right.
So
yeah.
It didn't
yeah.
have to be halfway.
Right, right. Right.
Like
right. Yeah. Right. I mean, look, I mean, JD is not a Jew. But, you know, we rely upon her, of course. Right, right. Yeah. So, I don't have to tell you that there are problems. Okay. Right. But, you know. Same thing. Right. 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 Tanya Name Hochi, we learned likewise. Maniach Yisrael Bosar Al Gabi Kecholim, that a Jew could leave meat on the coals. And the guy comes and he turns it over. And, you know, he, in other words, he's standing over there helping with the cooking until the Jew gets back from shul or from learning in the Beis Medrash. And he doesn't have to worry that it became treif in between. Okay? Another example?
The word choshesh?
Choshesh doesn't have to worry. Be apprehensive, okay?
Yeah.
That, you know, that it's treif. Right.
Parents were Yiddish
word, and I can't... They use it in Yiddish sometimes.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Or I suspect, or something that, right. Yeah, right.
What is the word?
Choshesh.
Choshesh, yeah.
Right.
That's what was ringing a bell.
Right, right. Another example along the same lines. Shofesis isha kedera gabe kira, right? The Jewish woman puts a pot on the stove, Uvos Ovedes Kochovim, and then the Shiksa comes along. Next page, or I should have taken it. Oh, I'll just do the last words and call it quits. So you can see where it's leading to. Right, Lamed Ches Amud Beis, Magisa, and she keeps stirring it. Until the woman gets back from the bathhouse, or from Beis Hakneses, or from Shul, the Eino Chesheshes, and she doesn't have to be worried that the Shiksa has come and spoiled it. Okay, so we shall stop at this point tonight. Okay, tonight is the what is it? The 14th already, huh?
14th, I believe.
Yeah, the 14th of December 2005, and we're continuing now from where we left off last week. Lamed Ches, Amud Beis, beginning with the second line on the top. All right. So we see from this example what we're talking about right now is the problem of cooking. Okay. What is the role of the goy? What's the role of the Jew? And the point is that if the Jew is involved in the cooking, then we don't have to worry that it became treif, because otherwise it would be considered bishul akum, which definitely is a no-no. Okay, it's a big problem. I told you, as far as caterers are concerned, and so on, as long as a Jew has something to do with it, you see, so that takes it out of the category of bishul akum and making it into the bishul israel.
What about a Jew who
doesn't keep kosher? That's a problem.
Not even doesn't know the law,
right,
of kosher.
Right.
I mean, why would that make it? Well,
this is why you really need a mashgiach under the premises, right? You know, somebody who really knows what's going on, right? No question about that. But in those days, apparently, they felt that even the average person knew something, you see.
Right.
Okay, so Gemara now says, good evening, Gerv. That's what the Gemara says. Gemara says, good evening, Gerv.
Yeah.
Question was raised. Okay. Hiniyach evet kechavim lehovach Yisrael mahu. Okay. The previous example, if you remember, who started the cooking? The Jews started the cooking. Okay. Goy came along and helped out. But when the Jew comes back, he or she doesn't have to be afraid, you know, that they were spoiled, because they were actively engaged in simply working on the meal itself. So now the question is, what if the goy started the cooking? Okay, in other words, he is the one who put the food on the stove, or put the meat on the coals. Of course, we're talking about kosher meat, we're not talking about trefa meat. Okay. Along came the Jew, and he turned the meat over. Okay. Mahu. So what? So Amar Rab Nachman by Yitzchok. Rab Nachman Yitzchok said, "Kal v'chomer." Says, "Look, it's a very logical thing, because before we said what? The previous example, the Jew started, but who?" Gemara b'yad oved kechavim, right? The finish of the cooking, the ending of the cooking, was done by the goy, right? But nevertheless, we said what? Mutar. That food is permissible, right? So Gemara b'yad Yisrael kol shem. If the ending of the cooking process was by a Jew, isn't it all the more reason, I mean, to know that, you know, that kosher could be used? Itmor Nami, likewise along the same lines, we learned another Baraisa, which says, Abba Rabbi Barachona, Rabbi Barachona said, O Rabbi Yochanan, in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, the Yom Riva, and there are those who say, O Rabbi Acha Barachona, that is Rabbi Acha, the son of Barachona, O Rabbi Yochanan, said the name of Rabbi Yochanan. In any case, what did he say? Bein shehidi achavet kechavim behofach Yisrael, whether it was the goy who put it on first and the Jew came along and turned it over, or Ben Sheniach Yisrael Lechavachivit Kechavim, or whether it was a Jew who started the cooking process and the Goy came along to help out, Mutar. The Eino Osir Ad Shetahei Tchilosei Yigmarei B'yadei V'kochem. And the food becomes prohibited only if the beginning and the ending process was done by the Goy.
Is this our home?
Right.
It's all done by
the Goy. It's all
right.
Done.
Right.
So if a Jew, according to this, even if a Jew is in the middle of it,
right,
has had a hand in it at all,
yeah,
it's okay?
Well, according to Rabbi Yochanan, if the Jew was only in the middle, but he didn't start it and he didn't finish it, then it would not be all right. But not everybody would agree to Rabbi Yochanan. That's the point.
The Goy starts it. The Jew is in there, and the Jew comes in and finishes it.
Right.
How do they know that everything that the Goy started is kosher?
Because presumably, what the Goy started was for the benefit of the Jew. We're not talking.
You presume that.
Yeah, there has to be a presumption, otherwise.
Right. But it's idol worship is a thing,
right? Right. I mean, you have to presume that.
Yeah. All right.
Because otherwise it wouldn't make any sense.
But that rule doesn't hold today anyway.
It would if we know, if we examine, we know that all the ingredients were kosher to begin with. But as I say, I mean, with catering, this is a problem, you see.
Yeah.
Right. So if you know that all the ingredients are kosher and the Goy started it, but the Jew came along and he added what he did, the supervisor and so on. In that case, it would be kosher, okay? But if it were done only by the Goy without any Jew supervising it at all, then of course you have a different problem. Okay. Omar Rabina said, Hilkaso. The halacha is okay. In other words, what? What does it mean? The hilchasa. So we have to assume it means that the halacha taka follows what we just said. Okay. Now they bring another example. We were talking about cooking, right? So now we talk about baking. Okay. Horifta. Shagar evit kechavim biofer Yisrael. All right. A somewhat similar situation. The fire was started by whom? By the Goy. Goy started the fire, okay? And then along came the Jew, and the Jew did the baking. All right? That's situation A. Situation B, Inami, likewise, Shoga Yisrael, your favorite Kechavit. The Jew started the fire, right? And the baking was done by a Goy. Okay? Inami. Shoga evit kechavim, yofa evit kechavim. Right? This is where it's a little. You can see what is being added at this point.
Yeah.
All right. Here now, the case number C, if you wish.
Right.
Okay? Is that the Goy starts the fire, he does the baking, right? So far, it doesn't sound so good, right? The Yosef Yisrael, and along came the Jew. The chosabot.
Stir the coals.
Yeah, and he started to stir the coals, you know, in the oven that was baking, right?
Made the fire go strong, yeah.
Right. That doesn't sound so good, but they say, sharp your dummy, it's okay.
They're very lenient
over here in this particular case. All right, so this. I mean, again, if the Jew stirs the coal again for cooked food, it's the same thing, you see. The idea is that he continues, that he does something. He adds something to the heating process, okay?
Isn't that comparable to starting the fire? He's making the fire go higher?
Yeah, but the point is that even though he hadn't started it, but nevertheless, he now has a hand in it. And because he has a hand in it, then it makes it kosher. Okay? Yeah.
Very liberal.
It is, no question about
it. Very liberal.
I mean, But, you know, this is
but
the best.
That's not a lot luck necessarily, is it?
Could be accepted, yes. Yeah. Yeah. There's a machlekes about it. But the lenient opinion is to accept this point of view. Okay?
That upsets the whole thing of the mashgiach.
Well, but if the mashgiach himself is the person who's doing it, you know, that's the point.
But
yeah, the mashgiach,
like
right.
Bread, I mean, there wouldn't be too much problems.
Yeah, correct. Correct.
Less problems.
Right. Right.
So all the Jew has to do is come and stir the fire up, and then he can
stir the fire, but stay around,
stay
around, and take a look, and so on. Even if he's doing the actual work itself, right?
The fire,
right.
Shake up the coal,
right.
And
right.
Off you go. Yeah.
Right. He collects his fee. Yeah.
But he should be on the premises to make sure.
He should be on the premises.
Right.
Doesn't say that.
I can see where people would say this might be the law, but we don't want to.
Yeah.
Just like many other halachas, there are people who try to go several steps further.
Right.
And look at
but,
yeah.
You know, I'm thinking in terms of actually places that I've been to. I mean, kosher restaurants, okay? When you have a small kosher restaurant, maybe you can have, you know, the balabas themselves. But I'm thinking in terms of a large restaurant in New York, okay? A large restaurant in New York, they have a lot of goyish help working in the kitchen too, don't they? They have a lot of goyish help in the kitchen. Bakeries, I've been to Shemesh Shabbos bakeries where they have, you know, the boss is Jewish, he keeps an eye, but the Puerto Ricans are doing the work or something like that. You understand? So, whatever. So the point is, and according to what we're now learning, there are grounds, you know, for permitting it and considering this being kosher.
Very legal,
right?
Very legal.
So, okay.
Yeah, but would you buy from them?
No.
If that was the situation. Well, sometimes it's very difficult to find a situation that would meet your.
And these are places that are supervised periodically by rabbis and things like that. I mean, I have to tell you that, okay? But for actual cooking, it's better if you have a full-time mashgiach. There's no question about that.
So it's probably easier.
Well, when you think about it, if you have bread, once it's been in the oven a while, and it starts to come to its rise and come to its form, let's say. Except for smearing something on the top, it's hard to put something inside without making a noticeable change.
Well, they're not going to do it during the time that, you know, very often, let's say, they'll put egg wash. But that egg wash itself is kosher.
Right.
Because they all use the same egg wash, which is liquid eggs.
Right.
And it comes from an OU place, okay?
But they put that on before it goes into
The oven, of course.
I use it on the college.
Right, right.
But I don't use eggs. I use the regular eggs.
Right, I mean, but for commercial, you know, they buy a big drum, you know, this business on the. Right. Sure.
I could shoot her a little while.
All right.
That's already a different story. Okay. I'm talking about a kosher baker.
But you couldn't really inject something without showing.
No, right.
It's going to be all kinds of. I can feel, I say, the form in which they put it, how do you know what they smeared it with? Maybe if they cleaned it with lard, who knows what they cleared it with, you know?
Right.
I remember my brother telling me he was in the Marines, so his job was to clean the pots in the kitchen, okay? And they used lard to line the pots with it because it kept them from rusting and so on.
Yeah.
Sure.
Like a
I don't know what they do it now. This I'm talking about World War II.
Yeah,
you know. So I mean, it could be anything, you know. Don't they even on a bottle of water? You buy a bottle of water has no U on it, right?
You're right. Most Poland Spring has the OU.
The water
is kosher.
Water is water, right?
Yeah.
How was the bottle formed? It's a plastic form.
Well,
and what they use for lubricating the dyes that form the bottle and so on. That's what they're concerned about.
Maybe.
of aluminum foil, the same way, right?
Yeah.
The
paper plate.
Yeah. I mean, they were talking about the fact, some of them making aluminum foil that they smeared lard on the machinery in order that the foil would come out more easily or something like that. Yeah. So, so you look for Hapshulamit, you know.
Sure.
That's all. All right.
We trust the people who inspect it.
Okay, now comes a fish story.
Okay.
All right. So, Dagbaliyat, a fish which has been salted. Okay. Chizkiya Shari, Rav Yochanan Asar. Okay, so Chizkiya said that it's kosher, and Rav Yochanan prohibited it. Okay. Rashi, why did Chizkiya permit it? He says, the love who bishul, he says, it's not cooking, just to salt it. That's why Chizkiya's reasoning. But, you know, obviously, Rabbi Yochanan was more suspicious and he prohibited
Rashi
it.
Says
okay. Right. Beitzot tzluya. A roasted egg, bar kapora shore, Rabbi Yochanan asa. All right, so this time we're talking about the egg, okay? Now we're talking about an egg which was roasted. In other words, it was put on the fire by a goy. Okay, right. Yeah, for Pesach, right. Apparently they used to like to roast eggs back in those days.
Rabbi Yochanan objects everything.
Yeah, Rabbi Yochanan is opposed to this. Okay. No, what are you going to do?
Okay.
All right. Remember, Dimi came from Eretz Israel to the Babylonian academies. You know, he would always bring reports, what's going on in Eretz Israel, how are they deciding cases, and so on and so forth. So he gave the following report. He said, Omar Echad Dog Maliach V'Echad Beis Tzluya. It makes no difference whether it is the case of the salted fish or the roasted egg. Chizkiya Bar Kapora. Chizkiya and Bar Kapora, in other words, another authority, right? Shoru. They both gave permission to it. For Rabbi Yochanan, Osar. But Rabbi Yochanan said no. Okay.
Is this Yochanan Bar Sakai?
No. It's a different Rabbi Yochanan.
This is in the Gemara.
Right.
Okay.
Stubborn yard, Rabbi Yochanan.
Okay. So, Rabbi Chiya Parvo. A Chia who came from Parvo or something like that, Ikla Leve Reish Kodusa. He happened to come into the home of the head of the Babylonian community. The Reish Kodusa, he was the head, the exilot. Right.
Does that mean the Galus?
Here, Galut are talking about Babylonia, right. And the head.
He was a descendant of the royal house of David.
Yes, and also he had the authority backed by the Persian authority. I mean, Babylonia was really Persia at that time, okay? It was backed by the Persian king that he was the head of the Jewish community, and he lived in like in royal splendor, but at the same time he was also a great scholar, and he always invited scholars and so on and so forth, you know, to the royal court, right? So, listen to this, my son.
All right.
So, Omulay. So they asked him the following question. This Rabbi Chiya who came. Says, Beitzot Tzluya Mai. Tell me, what about a roasted egg? Is it okay? So, Amaluhu. So he said to them, Chizkiya Bar Kapora Shoru. Right? Chizkiya and Bar Kapora both said it's okay. Rabbi Yochanan also, Rabbi Yochanan prohibited the Yain Devor shall echod b'mekem shtayim, and one authority cannot be accepted when there are two authorities who oppose him. You understand?
Yeah. According to the notes here, it says that the roasted egg was roasted by an
idol worshiper. Yeah, Rashi makes that point. That was, right? Yes, it was a Levit Kochavim, right. I mean, if it were done by a Jew, I mean, there wouldn't be a question, obviously, because we're talking about, you know, is it Bishul Akum or not? I mean, right? Yeah.
Doctor, who said that
by Rav Pia reported this, right.
But who said it? Is it the
Reish
Galusa who said this?
No. Rav Pia, somebody asked him, okay?
Rav Pia responded.
Yeah, okay. It could have been the Reish Galusa, so it could have been somebody else who asked.
He wasn't involved in
this. Right.
Okay,
right.
I just was wondering.
Yeah.
I was
Chizki and Barakabar, they both said it's okay, and right. But Rabbi Yochanan rejected, but he's a minority opinion.
Yeah.
It's okay.
So the words that you use in Eved, Eved?
No, Bishul.
No, for the
Eved Kochavim.
Eved
Kochavim, right.
Eved
Kochavim.
Like from Eved, the worker?
Yeah, the word means to serve.
To serve.
Right.
Yeah.
Eved is a
servant. Right.
To serve. And what is the other word?
Kochavim, stars, literally. In other words, he serves the idols. Right.
To serve
with
stars.
Yeah.
Stars. Kochavim
and stars. Yeah, right, right. I mean, the idea being, look, I mean, the Romans, for example, they named stars after their idols, right?
Mercury, Venus,
you name it, so on, okay? And not only they did it, but, you know, all the idol worshippers did the same thing, okay? So that's why the term
Eved Kochavim. Nowhere in the premise here, in the previous argument, do they say that they're talking about a roasted egg or salted fish that's done by a goy.
Right.
Yeah.
But
Rashi points it out, right?
Because otherwise the question wouldn't be anything, you know. If a Jew did all the preparation, what are we knocking ourselves out over? You understand?
Actually, I was once at a hotel in Paris.
Yeah.
And there were some people looked like they were servants. And they had like a coffee room.
Oh, yeah, I remember this.
And they made the statement that they thought it was acceptable to have the hard-boiled eggs because apparently the owner only used this pot for the purpose of making hard-boiled eggs in its shell, and they were referring to this.
They thought
it was acceptable for them.
A lot of firm Jews existed on hard-boiled eggs and some canned stuff. Right, right, right.
By Goyim.
Yeah.
So they ate something like the Rice Krispies or something in paper plates. They had plastics, whatever, and
they ate the hard boiled eggs, claiming they were using this particular. This is why I say, this is why, here, we find a cooler, okay? And in other words, a lenient opinion.
I was ready to eat everything here that didn't jump off the plate at me.
Right.
People were much more strict.
All right.
Okay. So far everything sounds hunky dory, right? So Omar Luhu Rav Zvid. So Rav Zvid, who was present over there, said to them, meaning, you know, to the people who were working in the kitchen or whoever it was, he says, Lo tasisule. Lo, it really is lo tasis. In other words, don't pay any attention to him. In other words, don't accept
his
opinion.
Him.
Right.
Don't
obey him. Right. That's how the people means.
Don't
listen
to him.
Right. To listen or to obey. Right. Omar Abaye, because Abaye had said, Hilchaso, that halacha is kavosi the Rabbi Yochanan. That the halacha is in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yochanan. Aye, when they heard that, Ashkiyuhu Naguto the Kala, so they gave him to drink a cup of vinegar or something.
Yeah.
Benoch Davshe, and he passed away.
Killed him.
He passed away.
Right.
Because he comes up in Baba Metzia.
Who did they do that to? The young
man?
To Rav Zvid. To Rav Zvid.
He does. He's a,
why did they have to agree to it?
They were mad at his opinion. They felt it's perfectly okay to serve eggs, and he comes and he tells them, no, it's prohibited.
No, because he said, don't listen to them. That's why. That's why they gave him the. He insulted them.
Right.
It's an insult. Said, don't listen to him. He doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah, they certainly did something bad.
These are religious people who are worried about the law, and they're going to kill them?
Well, okay. Rashi.
Okay.
Naguta de Choli says, Hanach de Veresh Galuta. He says, those people who worked in the household of the Veresh Galuta, the Lo Havid Male, they were not the very best people, not people of the best character, he says. Mishum de Achbir Alayhu. It's because, you know, he was a Machbir over them, and they resented that. Okay? So that's why they knocked off Rav Zvid. Okay.
Commentated quite a bit,
Okay, Thoda Rabbonin. Now we come into another mice over there. All right. Hakafrisin, the Hakaplutos, the Hamitadio, the Achamin, the Akolio, Shalohen, Mutorin. All right. The following things that the Goyim are preparing are kosher. Kafrisin. Kafrisin is, they call it like caper berries or something. Okay? The Hakplutos, that I haven't the vaguest idea of what it is.
Leeks.
Solzine
leeks.
Yeah, I mean, this is what Rashi says. I mean, he says karsi. Okay? And he says, they're cholin kemosha in chayin. In other words, these are eaten raw. I remember we already learned previously that raw food. Right, it's okay. Caper berries.
Oh, yeah, I know what this is.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, fine.
And the next object over there, let's see, what did we say? Talia. What Metalia is?
Talia.
Talia. Rashi says, I'll tell you later on. So we'll have to wait another couple of minutes to find out what Metalia is.
It's
the Hakplutos, right. Yeah, we said that those are leeks.
Mm-hmm. Right. I'll tell you later. We'll look it up in the meantime.
The Hachamin. Chamin is, you know, hot water. Okay. The Hakolios. That, as we learned, remember that they would take pieces of grain and roast them, okay, like popcorn, right? Shalohen, in other words, made by Goyim. He says, Mutar, they're permitted. You can eat them. Dates at Sluyo Asura. But an egg which has been roasted by them is prohibited.
Wow,
so we see again that not everybody is in agreement with the lenient opinion that we had mentioned before. Okay.
If somebody makes you hot water in their pot, you can still you can eat it. So
right.
If you put
that's
it in your tea bag and somebody else
that's
hot
correct.
Water.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's the implication from this.
I wonder why they prohibit it.
Why they prohibited it, I guess they thought it was cooking, that's why. So it was done by the goy without the Jewish supervision to begin with.
But we just have
the word shell is not mentioned.
Not mentioned.
No.
Because if it were in the shell, what they do was
see, the word which means cooked, you know, that would be mevushel. So beitza would be mevushelet or something like that, you see.
But earlier on, we had an opinion that said, look,
we had
even
previously,
if the goy starts the roast meat and finishes the roast meat, it's fine. So if the roast meat is fine, why is the roast steak?
Yeah, right. But the Jew had to have some hand also in the cooking in between.
Right.
Yes, I'm sorry. Right. Thank you. Okay. And Shemin, he says, the olive oil, right? So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi Beis Dino, this we already learned before, that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi and his court, Nimnu Olav, they took a vote concerning it, the Hiti Ruhu, and they permitted it. Okay.
Allowed to vote on it.
Yeah, because if you remember, at first there was a question, the Shemin was prohibited, but then they saw, that people were using it. They didn't, not everybody had accepted the Isser, and they decided in all probability it was too hard, and there was nothing really, to say that the oil was being used as an integral part of Avodah Zarah, you see. So they voted to lift the ban on it. Okay. All right. Now, I'm Tanya. That mysterious word that Rashi said.
Yeah.
We'll explain afterwards. Okay.
Tanya.
Yeah. Okay. Nimalov Hidra. Tanya, we have learned. He Hamatanya, right? What we call Matanya. He Fasliyo. So it's the same as the word Pashliyo. He Shiato. It's the same as the word Shiato. We don't know. So that's what they want to know. My Shiato. So what is Shiato? They're all the same. But what is it? So Rabbi Baruch Hoda. So he said, Omar Rabbi Yochanan, he says, Hor, he says, Arboyin Shonin the Nofik, I Utah in Mitzrayim. Okay, he says, it's already 40 years since this has come out, made from Egypt, okay. The Rabbi Balchona, the day, and Rabbi Balchona, in his own name, not in the name of Rabbi Dolphin, said, Omar Ha, Shitten Shonin the Nofik, I Utah in Mitzrayim. It's already 60 years that we've been talking about this.
40 years.
First 40.
Another means it's 60.
Right. Rabbi Yochanan said 40 years.
Oh, yeah.
Rabbi Yochanan said 60 years already.
Below
Pligay. And there was no disagreement, Bar Mishone or Mar Mishone, either between the one authority, namely the Rabbi Yochanan, in the amount of years that he said, and the other authority, the Rabbi Baruch Chodo, in his years.
What are you talking about here? What incident happened?
They're still trying to tell you what this
type of food. They've been talking about what this food is.
What it is, right. Still trying to tell you, right.
Yeah.
Right.
It was made in Egypt, and
right.
We haven't seen it for a long time.
Right.
It was 40 years ago at the
right.
Start.
Yeah. So he says, all right, well, because they had an authority, they heard, an authority said that it's okay, but they didn't know what it is. They didn't know what it is.
Okay.
So, at any rate, they said, Maisu Bizra de Karpasa, Bizra de Kitna, Bizra de Shablilusa. Okay. They took Bizra means, in this case, like a seed, okay, of carpas.
Carpas.
Yeah. Carpas. We usually use carpas for celery, we say. Right. Okay.
Yeah. Right.
Right. Bizra de kitna, and also a seed of cotton, flax, in other words, right? Or Bizra de shablilusa, whatever the heck that is. The seed of the shablilusa. Rashi says fenugreek, right.
It's either
fenugreek. Fenugreek, right. Or tilth. It's an herb. Right. And what do they do with these seeds, he says? The Torah Luhu Bahadeh Dori. And they cooked them together. Bifashure. The sure, I guess, means like a lukewarm water or something like that. Veshavku lei and let it grow, yes, ad the mekabel, apparently until it grew large, okay? For my say, chatz bechadetei, and then they would bring a new jug, l'mola l'hu mayav, and they would fill it with water, v'tor b'hu gargishto, and they would cook in it gargishta, whatever the heck that is, gargishta, arzila, says Rashi. I'm not sure what arzila is either. How do you translate the word gargishta over there? Gargishta, what does he say for that?
I think they were growing marijuana, Jeff.
So what's gargishto? No? Rashi says Arzila, but I don't know.
Working on this.
But I don't know what Arzila and Rashi thinks.
Right, we'll let you know. We'll let you know later.
All right. They used to go to the bath house.
Oh, and they soak clay in them? Clay?
Clay?
Soak clay in them, yeah.
All right. God's fine.
Gear?
They soak clay in this woman's own. All right.
Why would you soak clay? Why would you soak dirt?
I don't know.
And the seeds attached to the clay.
Oh, yeah,
Medabkin, Bay, right, and the seeds, right. They cling to it, right? The Ayalin, the Bane, and then they would bring it into the bathhouse.
What'd they do that for?
No, they entered the bathhouse.
To grow.
No, they went into the bathhouse.
They went into the bathhouse.
Yeah, they went.
All right, so they went into the bathhouse.
And by the time they had enough to,
by the time they came out, the lovely thing, they had already sprouted, right?
They
achli menayhu, and they were able to eat from it.
They soaked themselves pretty good.
Yeah.
This is a
lovely. Well, lovely means to sprout, you know. Right.
When they say a bathhouse, you're not talking about a mikveh.
No.
You're talking about a bathtub.
A bathtub, right, exactly.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
Right, okay.
The Kaire, the Binso.
What's the halachic issue with this? All this
I don't understand what the purpose of it is.
Can they eat that?
It simply said that the stuff was kosher. But they didn't know what it was, so that's why it was
like. None of these things will be.
So this is a dish, really. It's not a.
It came in right. The vegetable.
It's not a real vegetable.
They put it into water, right? And they put clay into the pot, and apparently they were growing it in the pot.
Yeah,
this
is
apparently what happened.
But what happened?
Okay.
Interesting.
So it's three different plants that they're growing.
Right. Three different seeds and so on. That they're and then. Right. And so eventually, you know, it grew during the time. Apparently, it was fast growing.
Okay.
It was very fast growing. Right. 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 Okay.
Well, except lukewarm water, you wouldn't call that cooking.
Right. Exactly.
I'm waiting for this one.
All right. And they would eat it, okay?
Yeah.
And then the Kaire. Then they became cold.
Yeah.
Binso de Roshehu Atufu de Karaihu. From the hairs of their head
to
the toenails of their feet.
You mean the stuff they ate?
They ate the stuff that chilled them, right.
Why are we talking about whether it's kosher? Who would want to eat it anyway?
Why?
Who is eating it?
Apparently, they got a kick out of it. What am I going to tell you?
I told you, I think it's marijuana.
Okay. Okay.
Maybe they want to have
a. Well, right. Yeah, God is a sort of a.
Right.
I don't understand.
Okay.
The addictive plant, that's in Yemen, God.
So the water was heated in a large pot. We are concerned that the water would absorb the non-kosher flavors from the walls of the idolatrous pot. It previously been used to cook non-kosher.
Yeah, well, that already leads to a different question. Right.
Of course, dates cooked in the water to be prohibited. We're talking about dates here.
No, that's another one. That's another one. You're running ahead. You're running ahead. Omar Rav Ashi. We didn't finish the story yet. So Omar Rav Ashi. Rav Ashi said, Omali Rabbi Chanina. So Rabbi Chanina said to me, Milin, which means, baloney.
Baloney?
Words. I read the Delta
Line.
Agwaj.
So he didn't believe this whole thing.
No,
about
he didn't
the clay
believe it. Right, right. He didn't believe it. Right. Okay.
Yeah, while they're in the bathhouse, having a good time.
But another version, all right?
Another version
is the Amrei law, and there are those who say that what he said is bimilin, meaning it was done by words of magic, by incantation.
Incantations.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah.
We don't believe in that stuff anymore.
Right. What is it? Interesting, Maisa.
That would make it in. The thing that we don't know what it is.
Right. Right. Right.
Rashi believes in incantations in magic.
Rashi doesn't have to believe in it.
Just one.
He's only explaining what somebody's opinion is. What Bemilin means. Bemilin means, you know, through magic.
Bemilin.
Right? See. Take a look at the Rashi. The first one said Milin, right?
Yeah.
So he says, Milin means Divrei Kozav. Lying. It's a lie.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. The loam, the lavlavei, the chadashata, because plants cannot begin to blossom in 1 hour, okay, in a short amount of time. But the other version, Bimilin, he says, Al Yidei Divrei Lachash, right? Through, Lachash over here means the magical incantations. Shel Kashofim, you know, people who perform Kishuf, right? Right? He knows it. That's they're doing it through magic. Okay. All right. Let's see, what time is it now? Yeah. Okay. Tonight is the 21st of December, the year 2005. We are continuing from where we left off last week. In the Gemara with Azora, Lamed Ches, Amud Beis, we're now approximately a little below the middle of the page. Okay. All right. So now, okay. Okay, right. Thunder Rabbanan. Okay.
Where?
Let's see. Count down around 8 lines from where it gets white. From the first white line. The last thing that we had over there, the Amr Law Bimilin. And we interpreted that following Rashi. And there are those who say that it was through magic, right? So now they come to another questionable food, whether it's kosher or taif, since it's prepared by whom? By a goy. That's the answer. All right. So Tana Rabbana, sages thought as follows. Tana Rabbana normally means that it's a baraisa. Okay. Hakuspon shalov dekechovim shehuchbu chanin b'yoyla gedoyla poser b'yoyla ketadna. Buta. All right, so first of all, we have to define what is this kuspan. Again, thank God that we have a Rashi. No, it has nothing to do with it, okay?
Uh-huh.
No, it has nothing to do with money either. No. Okay. So, we're on the right page. Kuspan. Rashi says, Poseilus tel temorim. All right, let me explain what Rashi is telling us. Our kuspon. Right, see it? Okay. He says that the rotten parts of the dates, in other words, presumably good dates were already chosen, but, you know, those that were inferior, right? So what are they going to do with them? So, what they did is to make it into Sheikho. Sheikho is like a beer, okay? They used it in order to distill it, right, and make it into a beer, a strong drink, Shechem. It's okay. And, it says, then the Choltinusan, and then they scald it. I guess that's part of the manufacturing process. Okay? Now, in what did they perform, in what did they prepare this kind of beer? So, let's see, let me keep my finger on the place over here. Yeah, okay. They were heated. We said, remember Rashi said that they scalded. So they were heated, in hot water, in a yore. A yore is a pot, in a big pot. So he says, if it's a yore gedola, if it's a big pot, then also it's prohibited.
Awesome.
Right. But the yore katana, if it was heated only in a small pot, then mutor.
But it doesn't explain.
It's permissible.
That the pots are not Jewish pots, they're Jewish pots.
Yeah, that's correct. That we have to understand.
They don't explain that.
Yeah.
Well, we have to understand. I mean, it says, Hakutzban shel ovdei kechavim. In other words, the goy made this. It's not a Jew who made it. If a Jew made it, it would be kosher. You understand?
No.
But it's a goy, and he cooked it in his pots.
Okay.
This is what the problem is. So if he kept... That means literally an idol worshiper. Right. Ovate serves, right? Kochavim, the stars. As I told you, I mean, the expression means an idolater. Okay? Yeah.
Alright.
So, he prepared it that way. So the question is, can a Jew drink it? Obviously, this is what the question is.
Well, what
happens
to
the man?
Is
it
a small pot or a big pot?
Yeah,
alright. Good. So let's take a look.
The same thing.
The good. So let me get invited. Okay.
Was it the rotten dates that scored it, or the idolatrous pot?
No.
No, the problem is the idolatrous pot to begin with.
Yeah.
Okay? I mean, the dates in themselves, they're not treif. You understand? But being cooked in an idolatrous pot, the chances are that it may have absorbed the taste of, the pot. Because presumably, a pot in those days, the pots were not made of aluminum. You understand? But they were made out of clay. And clay, as we know, will absorb. Okay? So that this is what the problem is. So now, we'll see what is the difference between them. Okay? First of all, they want to give a definition. What do we mean by a small pot? Okay? The Ezehi Yerekatado, what is a small pot? So the Rabbi Yadai, said, Kol She'ein Tzipor Duror Yochel Nikones Besecha. If it's so small that a sparrow cannot go inside of it. Presumably a sparrow is a small bird, right? And so therefore, if the neck of this pot is so small that even a small sparrow can get into it, then that qualifies as a small pot. Therefore, what are we going to assume? Would the goy have cooked something in this, like a piece of meat or something like that? You understand? This is the question. All right. We have to go into to try to understand what's going on over here.
You can't get a sparrow into the neck.
Right.
Get very much beer in there.
Right. So now they immediately raise an objection to this, and they say the Dilma. Yeah, but maybe it says ad muye ad muha bayaluha. Maybe you know what they did with the sparrow? They cut it into little pieces, right? They put it into the pot, right? They simply took it apart and they cooked it in it. And therefore, the taste, as Rashi says, the taste of the bird, in other words, escaped and was absorbed. This is what we mean over here. Doesn't mean escape, but it means it was absorbed, in the pot. Okay?
The non-kosher.
Right.
suppose it's all in a pot, right?
Right.
So how do they justify that was in a small pot?
Right. So therefore they say Elo kolcha in rosh tzipor duro yochel dekodes b'sefer. So they qualify it and they say we're not talking about putting in an entire bird inside over there. Okay. What we are saying is that if the head of the bird cannot fit in, and that's the smallest part of the bird, then in that particular case, we know that he can't use it in order to cook. Therefore, if he prepared this, this kind of beer out of the psyllus, you know, the throwaways of dates, then in that case, we don't have to worry about that. So far, so good. Now comes along another baraisa and says, didn't we learn another baraisa? What? Achas yore gedoylo, the achas yore ketado, mutor. It makes no difference whether it's a big pot or it's a small pot, but it's permissible. So they say, look, Hashem, that's not a difficulty. Because what we're really talking about are two different opinions. Ho kaman omar neisen tanav gan osur. Ho kaman omar neisen tanav gan mutar. In other words, in the case where we said, you know, that in the big pot it is prohibited, because we weren't arguing about the little pot, but we were talking about the big one, right? And he says it's prohibited. Why? Because he holds that a nosein tam lefgam, which means if the pot or whatever food had been cooked in it, you understand, previously, it spoils the taste of the new product, okay, then it is prohibited. Whereas the other opinion says that if you use this pot and the taste is spoiled, that makes it kosher. Nes in town of Gan,
mutar. What makes it kosher?
The taste is bad.
In other words, the taste is bad, then in that case, it's kosher.
If the taste is bad, kind of logic is that?
Kind of logic. It happens to be it's a principle in kashrus, however. That if it spoils the taste, so then in that case we can say that it was caused by the pots or something like that. And let's take a look at the Rashi over here, because he goes into a little bit further. Okay? Noisin Tam Nifgan. Okay? That's the next Rashi over there. Okay. So it says, Pluktahi Bethag Pasro. Right, this is a machlokes that we're going to come across in the final chapter of Aveda Zora, which says, Bechol Giulei Oivdei Kochovim, right, that whatever rotten stuff that the goyim put in, and by that I mean chazer or whatever it may be, I mean it doesn't have to mean that it's spoiled, but that, you know, that's an abomination, literally, giyule, okay? So whatever abominable food that the goy puts in, okay, no same time of God, it spoils the taste of the pot that's going to be used, okay? Sheharei nisbashel ho yisur esmo. Because we're not talking where it is at, you know, let's say that it takes out the tray for meat and it immediately throws in kosher food. You understand? We're not talking about that. That obviously is one. Tray can't do that, okay? We're coming again into very important principles of kashrus over here, which is what we've been dealing with the last few weeks.
You're reading Rashi now?
I'm reading Rashi, right? So Rashi says, Shaharein is bashel ho yisur ismo. Actually, the cooking of the abominable food, right, this was done yesterday, the day before. Uchvor hufag tabo, and its taste literally has already dissipated, right? The nifsal milino, and also it has become like puzzle through staying overnight, okay? So, in other words, what are we talking about? We were talking about a pot which is a noisin tablet of gum. The implication is that the cooking was done at least the day before, and therefore the taste already is sort of partially gone, you understand? So therefore it wouldn't affect the kosher food that is now being prepared. Okay? You understand? Right. Well, there's more to it. Okay, there's more to
it.
But right now, this is what Rashi is explaining. That this is the point of view that they all agree for the moment that it's noisin tam of gan, and it's from something that was the day before. Okay?
But if they could, so just to complete the sentence,
yeah.
It was cooked the day before, but today they're going to cook kosher food.
Right.
And
the question is, does the kosher food become treif by the taste that may have been absorbed?
So it's not even the use of it, it
right.
has to do with the absorbing the taste.
Correct. Correct. And it says, Chutz Mikdeira Bas Yoma. And we're not talking now for a pot which is within the same day. In other words, cooking had taken place that very same day of treif. We're not talking about that, okay? The noisin tam neshevach, because in that case we would say that actually it improves the taste by mingling of the treif of stuff that would add additional taste to the kosher thing, okay? The osur, and this is prohibited, okay? So, no sein tam neshevach, if it improves the taste, there's no question that it's what? It's treif. Okay?
But
it's treif.
The taste is bad, it's what
right.
it's
supposed right.
to be.
Right.
That's the
right. theological.
Yeah.
No sein tam neshevach.
Yeah.
The authorities are divided. Those who are machmir say what? That even though it is a no sein tam neshevach, it still is treif. Whereas those who are nekel, right, they say that noisin tam nefgam is kosher.
It was done 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, right,
yesterday.
Because presumably,
yesterday.
Right, he says yesterday, okay. Question is whether it's 24 hours, or does it mean just the, you know, yesterday itself, or something like that.
There's
more of it.
The taste no. What is it that makes the taste...
No, it's absorbed in the pot, that's the problem. You don't clean
the
pot that clearly, you know, that well or something like that, so some of it still stays in. As I say, you know, with us, with metal pots, it's not quite the same as with earthenware pots, but still, the basic principle still is there, it's still absorbed, okay? Yes.
There's an implication here,
yeah.
in that kind of an argument,
yeah.
that... the non-kosher food is tastier than the kosher food.
It may be.
If it's mixed with the non-kosher,
yeah.
it's going to be good.
Yeah.
If it tastes bad, it's kosher because it's
not
a
right.
non-kosher flavoring.
Yeah.
If it tastes bad,
it's sort of kosher's
the
pot.
Well, no,
okay.
The point is, so the non-kosher food is tastier than the kosher
yeah.
food.
Okay.
That's what it's
or
saying.
Maybe they just used a lot of fat and schmaltz for their...
Well,
kind of
whatever.
So,
but from the point of view of halacha, the tendency is to say that the decent tam nefgam is permitted. I remember when I was a student, they used to say about the food at Yeshiva University is always kosher because the decent tam nefgam, the taste is always horrible. But that was a joke. Okay. Now, I want to point out, however, this business about Bat Yomo and, you know, cooked yesterday. This is an important principle when it comes to koshering a pot. You understand? I mean, let's say that Chas v'Shalom, you know, something happened that the pot became treif. Okay.
You have to rest it for 24 hours.
Exactly. You're not allowed. You have to wait 24 hours before you can, because then we can apply the principle of Nesen Tav Nafgan is kosher, because even if anything had remained, but when you kosher the pot, the chances are that it's gone and it's not going to affect it in any way.
Whereas if it's... We kosher it first and then rest it? Or we rest it...
No, you have to rest it, then kosher it.
Rest it first and then kosher it.
Right.
You still have to
because,
kosher
huh?
You still have to
yes, kosher. Yes. Because otherwise, you cannot kosher something the very same day that's been used. So here's as we're going along over here, you see that we come across many, many important principles about kosher.
The J is necessary for the trefa material to dissipate, or what?
Yes. Yes. Well, going to the mikveh, I mean, that's already only for something that you buy from a goy. Pots, pans, something like that, you understand? Or it's been made by a goy, something like that. Then in that case, you have to title it, okay? If it were made by a Jew, sold by a Jew, and so on, then it wouldn't be subject to it. Yeah, of course, they are. So that's why dishes, pots, and so on should be taken. Okay. Next. Amar Rab Sheshes. Rab Sheshes said, Hai Mishko Shliko Darabaya Osu. Now he deals with oil. Mishko, remember, is olive oil. Okay. And olive oil which has been cooked, okay? And who did the cooking? In what kind of a pot?
The
non-Jew, right? Besides the Aramaya, literally an Aramean, but it's another way of getting around the censor. I mean, that really means, a goy, okay? So this is the question. Is it kosher, not kosher? Well, first of all, the statement is made by Rav Sheshes that it's also it's prohibited, right? And Omar Rav Safra, so Rav Safra said, Lamai, why? He says, Nichish law, right? We might be suspecting that Imishul Eruve Nisva Sori, Imishul Mishul Eruve Chavim Neachalhu Kaboshu Chai. All right. One possibility is, if we say that maybe he put wine and mixed it together with the olive oil, right? And because the goy put in wine, then we would say that what? That it's no good, right? Because he's using goyish wine, right? Or if we say because it was cooked by a goy, right? But we shouldn't be worried. So it's the Bai Nichishli. Why would we literally be suspicious of it? Why would we suspect that we can't use it? This is what Safra is saying, right? He says, why can't we use it? You think that maybe he mixed in wine? Does wine and olive oil, do they mix very well? No. Chances are that the taste would be spoiled, right? Sorry, Vasbir. It would spoil the taste, as Rashi explains. Or, if you say it's because it was cooked by a goy, well, olive oil can be eaten literally as it is, raw, literally, chai. Chai means raw. In other words, you don't have to process the olive oil. You can use the olive oil as is, and people do use it that way.
Chai is
okay.
The same word as libel.
Right. But here, what it means is, like raw. Right. Okay. So, in either case, right, or if you argue that it's because this oil comes into the same category as abominable foods of a goy. So he says, they say ta'am livgamu, then in that particular case, let's say a goy had used this previously. You understand? Had used a pot in which now we are cooking the olive oil, okay? So it's a nice ta'am livgam, right? It is a bad taste of the water. So it's permissible. So in other words, what is the gist of our Safra saying? He's saying, what are you worried about, Rav Shesus? For any one of the three reasons that I have mentioned, we don't have to worry about it, okay? It's permissible. After all, we learned that what? That the Beis Din of Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, they gave permission to do what? To use the olive oil of goyim. Okay, so we don't have to worry about it. As long as it's 100% pure olive oil, we don't worry about that. Okay. Bo minei b'Rabbi Asi. So they asked another kasha from Rabbi Asi. Hani ahini shliki darbaya mai. Okay, so let's take a look again at the Rashi. Those ahini are also the dates, alright? Dates that were cooked by a goy. Okay? What is your opinion? Kosher, nishpish, so he says, kol yei lo tibor lecha. He says, if they are sweet, but you don't even have to ask a kasha. As Rashi says, kol yei lo tibor lecha, mesukim vadai, sure. Alright? If they're sweet, obviously they must have permitted them to be eaten. Because if the date is sweet, then we don't have to worry that the fact that a goy cooks dates. Why? Because we learn that things that can be eaten raw are kosher. In other words, cooking the dates are not going to take it out of the nature, of being dates. So whether they're eaten raw or cooked, it's not going to make a trade. Right?
Where and whether it's cooked in a kosher pot or not? Or
well, if it's cooked in a kosher pot, we don't have to ask any questions. What if it's cooked by a goy in a goyish pot? But if the taste is still right.
Cooked fruit.
So why are they worried then about the residue of the same dates that they say it has to be in a small pot that will give it a bad taste?
Right. Okay. Because one reason that they gave, that they were afraid, is maybe that the wine was mixed in or something like that. So that's one of the reasons.
Yeah. All right. Yes, that's true.
It's not the same. It's transformed.
Right.
It's round. Yeah. Right.
But Marire, if the dates are bitter, lo tiboy lecho, don't ask any questions either. The vadai asiri, because they certainly are prohibited. Why? Again, Rashi explains this one. It says, Marire, if they are bitter, ain't on their chol, people are not going to eat them raw. Well, if they're not going to be eaten raw, then if you cook them, mematkon, that's going to sweeten the dates for use. You understand? And therefore, because the cooking made it sweet, so therefore it means that it's bishuli, right? It's a bishul. That's cooked by the goy, and that makes it into the category of prohibited.
It's
supposed
to change the taste. And
right.
Something was added to it.
Yeah. Because if people, remember we said a minute ago that if people could eat it raw, it's okay.
Right.
A sweet date can be eaten raw because it tastes good.
Right.
Okay, so we don't have to worry about it. Okay.
If you go to a boy's house and they make you baked apple.
Yeah.
And a sweet apple.
I personally would not, but also. Depends to what extent, you know, how you feel about it.
I don't know, I just never
be
sure what they might add.
Well,
you take something that's bitter and then cook it and make it sweet. I mean, rather than the it's asur
because of the fact that to begin with, the bitter date cannot be eaten raw.
It has to be
right. If it can be eaten raw, then you don't have to worry about it being cooked.
Right.
But if it cannot be eaten raw, then in that case, the cooking, which improves the taste, but it's not good.
It's sort of
right.
Inverse logic.
Right. And now it says...
that's logical because...
bad is good.
I can see that.
Good is bad.
Don't you usually, I mean, if you've got fruit not quite ready, let's say, but you want to cut it up and cook it, you're going to add things to it to smoothen it up a little bit because it hasn't really reached the full...
Right.
I've done that.
Okay. So now he asks the following question. Says, Mitzia, what if it's not sweet and not bitter? It's in between. Okay? Mitzia.
Right.
What's the story? So Amaruhu, so he said to him, my Tiboy the fool. What are you asking such cautious success? The Rabbi Osar, because my Rebbe said it is prohibited. Okay? Umanu, and who is he? So it was Levi who prohibited it. Levi said no. Only the sweet dates would be okay. As it's okay. Now, ask a question about something else. Shisisar. What does Shisisar? So Rashi explains as follows. God bless Rashi, because without him I wouldn't know.
Even without his people know what.
Tremendous, you know, it was one of the Rashi's. He was a tremendous commentator. He really made the Talmud accessible to people who had not spent years and years and years in yeshivas. But of course you have to understand enough, I mean, to you know, to get that what Rashi is. But
he wasn't of the time of the Talmud.
No,
centuries later.
Many
and
centuries
yet he
later.
Had to
right.
research
right.
some of these things
right.
that were not native to a Hebrew.
This is correct.
And
of course he relied upon earlier works too that had been published. But it's his commentary which really opened the Talmud for much larger study.
How did he ever do the research? Because what he's doing is giving us accessibility to language.
Right.
One wonders in France how he got to know what these words are.
You know, in Mikra, he always is quoting a Rav Darshan. Does for the Parshiot.
Yeah, well, he had teachers who were actually very good at interpreting, he gives credit, you know.
Right.
He has a good idea. A lot of Rashi's comments, of course, about the Midrash, were found in Levi's Gemaras as well. Right. But imagine his knowledge was so great, not only of the text of the Bavli, the Bible, the Targumim, the Midrashim, that, you know, he could connect in his mind a word that he was unfamiliar with a word found someplace else and figure out the meaning of it based upon that.
Without a computer. You can, categorize and cross-match and whatever. And what the computer is going to do is kill the development of the brain. He had to have it in the brain.
Well, the Rambam is another example.
The brain to be able to run a computer.
I mean, all these great Torah scholars. And in our own day, people like Rabbi Feinstein, Lubavitcher Rebbe, he was a great scholar in his own right. or Rav Soloveitchik, and so on. Several Soloveitchiks, I mean, not only, you know, the one that they refer to as the Rav, but he had a brother, Aaron. And so... they're very good.
But they all predate...
Alibi only had one hundredth of their ability.
They all predate the computer, though. They all predate the computer. I'd like to see what happens when the computer becomes this.
Well, today the computer has become very common. I mean, if they put the text of the Talmud on the computer and so on, like what Irv has.
I have the whole book. All Shas. All the Shas are one. One of the
right.
CD.
No, it's not a CD.
CD-ROM.
That's a very popular little thing that plays all the music.
iPod.
In my iPod.
Really?
All the entire Gemara.
The iPod.
And all what is it? Seven chapters. What is it?
What?
What composes the Gemara? How many different?
In the Gemara?
Yeah.
There are approximately 60 different Masechtas, but not all Gemaras are there. There are 60 Masechtas in the Mishnah. Because the Mishnah has various areas that were not treated.
Well, the Mishnah I have on there also in Yiddish.
Right.
But the Gemara is translated in English.
Yeah.
Wrote by a rabbi. So.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Right. Okay, getting back to our text over here.
Yes.
Okay. I was telling you what Rashi explains, how they make it. He says, Tavshil. This is a dish. It's made out of the flour of roasted grain, kolios, parched grain, roasted grain, sheyipshon betado, that they then take and they dry it in an oven. Okay? The yesha also mekebach hadoshim. Another way of making shiso, in other words, this is one type of shiso sauce, right? And another one is made out of the kebach hadosh. They take lentils and they grind it into a powder, into like a flour, right?
Yeah.
Well, the fish are hay, the suk, and yosef, and die, those are shab chomets. And because the taste is too sweet, Rashi says, they add chomets, they add vinegar to it. So now we already begin to see what is the problem going to be with this particular dish. It's the vinegar. Okay. Okay. So the Gemara continues. All right. First of all, we have two different opinions. Rav said it's okay. Right? Abu Hodesh Shmuel, the Levi. Whereas Shmuel's father and Levi, Osprey. Okay, they said it's awesome. So, the question is, what goes into it? In other words, with if the kernels that we said that the flour that was made out of parched grain, if it's made out of wheat or barley. Right? Everyone is in agreement that it's perfectly okay. However, the talfei, when it comes to the lentil flour that was used, right? The chola, where they have to add vinegar to it in order to cut down a little bit on the sweetness of the taste, he says, everyone is in agreement that it is prohibited. Right. Where is there a disagreement then? The talfei dibaya, where the lentils are cooked in water. Okay? Marsovar gazridan. the opinion of those who say, Lamas Levi and Shmuel's father, who said it's Asur, right? Why did they Asur it? They said because people are going to be confused and think, you know, that one Shesiso is the other, and since there is a prohibited type, so if we say that there's also a permitted type, then people won't know the difference. So therefore, what do? Asur. Okay. Keep Lige, but where there is a disagreement is Bechite Sa'are. In the case of, you know, where the flour is made of wheat and barley, or wheat or barley. Marsova Gazvidit Ha Atuha. One opinion says that we do have that Gazera. That was the opinion, if you remember, of the father of Shmuel, and maybe. And Ha right, Umar Sova Logas Vidin, and the other authority, the one that says it's permissible, says we don't make a gezerah, we don't make a decree, you know, prohibiting it, because it's kosher, essentially, to begin with. Omar Rav said, Trei Mineshis Yisor Shadar Barzilai Hagidodil Dobin. So Rav says, you know, when we take a look in the Bible, Tanakh, right? So we have a case, he says, where David HaMelech had to flee because Avshalom had taken over the city of Jerusalem, declared himself the king, and David had to flee at that time, and he was befriended by Barzillai of Gilad. Gilad is on the other side of the Jordan River, so obviously he had to flee over there in order to find refuge at the time, and Barzillai helped him. And according to Rav, you know how he helped him? One of the things that he gave him was this Shesisor. How do we know that? So let's take a look at the pasuk. It says, Barzillai offers David Mishkov, in other words, a place where to lie down, right? The Sipos. Sipos are, in this particular case, are like